Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael. I am reading the San Angelo Standard Times for the week of Sunday, December 5th, 2021. I'm narrating on Thursday, December 9th. I'll begin with the most recent articles. COVID-19 update, a look at San Angelo coronavirus data for December 2021 by Elena Edgen, published December 9th. Tom Green County, as of December 9th, City of San Angelo, 25,582 positive cases reported, 18 new positive cases, deaths 471, 301 from Tom Green County, 170 from other counties. 14 currently hospitalized, 272 active cases. Tom Green County COVID-19 Vaccine Tracker. Tom Green County has administered more than 120,647 doses of the COVID-19 vaccine as of November 30th, according to data from the Texas Department of State Health Services. That's up 1.91% from the previous week's tally of 118,381 COVID-19 doses administered. In Tom Green County, 45% of people living in Tom Green County are fully vaccinated as of November 30th. San Angelo redraws its voting district map. Here's what's changed. By John Tufts, published December 8th. The City of San Angelo approved redrawing its district voting map Tuesday after the latest census revealed a significant population change in some portions of the city. The plan city officials approved Tuesday, December 7th, makes minimal changes to existing boundaries and ensures all sitting council members remain in their current district, according to municipal documents. As part of the redistricting plan, the city intentionally underpopulated District 1, which includes the Lake Nazworthy area, to allow for future growth in the southern portion of San Angelo. Our population has grown more in the south, and so those districts had too many people, putting them out of balance, said John James, Planning and Development Services Director. Basically, this is a redrawing of those district lines to rebalance the population with the goal of making all the districts roughly equal, James added. You can't make it perfectly equal, but shooting for a tolerance in the 5% or less variation between districts. In dividing San Angelo's population as evenly as possible, officials adjusted the boundaries, giving each district the following number of people. District 1, 16,381 people. District 2, 16,505. District 3, 16,733. District 4, 16,605. District 5, 16,711. District 6, 16,958. James said one of the goals of redistricting is to ensure a balance of ethnic backgrounds in each district. Among other changes officials approved Tuesday were keeping districts 3 and 4 as strong minority districts. After a short presentation, no council members presented objections to the proposed boundary changes and opened the meeting up for public comments. Some San Angelo residents raised doubts about minority representation in District 3. We have single-member District 3, which gained in residents, but percentage-wise, the voting strength of Hispanics has been diluted, said Kilo Perez, a 55-year-old resident of San Angelo. Hispanic voters remain majority in District 3. The Hispanic population of District 3 grew overall, according to 2020 census data, an increase from 10,102 Hispanic people 10 years ago to 10,394 people in 2020. The Hispanic voting population of District 3 increased as well, census data showed. Hispanic voters grew in District 3 from 7,135 people 10 years ago to 7,635 Hispanic people in 2020, according to data. What appeared to concern Perez and others was that the percentage of Hispanic voters in District 3 fell slightly from 62.35% in 2010 to 59.04% in 2020 as a result of the boundary changes. That might not seem like a lot to you, but in the last 4 to 5 years, we've been having a lot of close elections that have been decided in some cases by one vote, Perez said. It's very important that the strength of the Hispanic voting abilities not be diluted by bringing in populations from another district that is majority Anglo, he said. As part of its redistricting plan to balance the overall population, the city brought in an additional 2,307 people from District 1 into District 3 for a total of 16,733 people. Out of those 2,307 people, the majority, a total of 1,122 people, were Anglo, nearly half the total people moved at 48.6%, which were brought into the traditionally minority-heavy district. According to city documents, there were additionally 916 Hispanic people, 39.7%, 101 Black people, 4.4%, as well as Asian, American Indian, Hawaiian, and multiracial people counted among the rest. Perez suggested the city hire a second contractor to look at the data, which officials appeared reluctant to do, to the number of available redistricting companies and a February 7th deadline imposed by the state. Despite a decrease in the percentage of Hispanic voters in District 3, the number of Hispanic voters across the city went up in every other voting district by more than 7.5% in District 6, according to census data. City hired outside help for redistricting. The city worked with Austin firm Allison Bass & McGee LLP, in which it awarded a $24,800 contract for legal counsel on redistricting, according to the city clerk's office. On Thursday, December 2nd, Robert Bass attended a public forum to answer questions posed by residents, some of whom were concerned minority votes were being compromised as a result of Bass's work. It wasn't an easy project, Bass said during an interview with the Standard Times. I've been doing redistricting work since 1978, so this makes it my sixth rodeo. It's easier when the two districts that are out of balance touch each other. Bass said districts 1, 4, and 6 in the north and south of San Angelo experienced a significant shift in population. As a result, Bass said his firm had to migrate population from one district to another to achieve a balance. District 3 was the most underpopulated, so we had to take more of that population shift, Bass said Thursday. After nearly an hour of discussion Tuesday, city council members unanimously approved the redistricting plan 6-0. Why did the district map change? San Angelo's voting map had to be redrawn after 2020 census data revealed the districts were not of sufficiently equal population to comply with the equal voting principle established by the U.S. Constitution. Voting boundaries in San Angelo can be redrawn if as much as 10% of the population changes in each district, according to the city charter. The 2020 census revealed 3 out of 6 voting districts in San Angelo experienced significant population growth. District 1, which includes Lake Nasworthy and southern portions of the city, grew by 15.83%, a shift from 15,772 residents in 2010 to a total of 18,269 people in 2020. In District 4, on San Angelo's eastern side, the population grew from 14,967 people in 2010 to a total of 16,635 people in 2020, a growth of 11.14%, according to census data. The most amount of growth happened in District 6, near areas around Southland Boulevard, where census data shows the population grew by 18.93%, from 15,735 people in 2010 to 18,714 people a decade later. According to municipal documents, districts 3 and 4 in San Angelo remain strong minority districts, with Hispanic, Asian, Hawaiian Pacific Islander, and other multiracial populations seeing increases in the population and voting age overall. Special election of Lane Carter's vacant San Angelo City Council seat set for January 2022. By John Tufts, published December 7th. 3 weeks after Lane Carter stepped down from office, the race to fill his vacant seat on the San Angelo City Council has officially begun, but candidates will have to scramble if they want to be elected. On Tuesday, December 7th, the six remaining members of City Council voted unanimously to approve a special election next month for single-member District 5, which includes areas of Santa Rita and College Hills. The election to fill Carter's vacancy normally would have taken place 120 days after his announcement to leave office, according to Section 11 of the Texas Constitution, for terms exceeding 2 years, but not 4 years, and when the remaining term is more than 12 months away from re-election. Carter resigned from City Council on November 16th to announce he was running for Tom Green County Judge during next year's March primary. "That would have given us until March 16th to conduct the election," said Julia Antilli, city clerk. "However, there's another provision in state law that says there are 30 blackout days on either side of a primary, so that pushed us back to the very last available date for an election to be January 29th. "A lot of this is happening near the holidays. It is a very compressed timeline," Antilli said. "But again, we've been in close communication with the Secretary of State, and this is what we have to do." Antilli said the filing deadline for the upcoming election would begin Tuesday, December 7th, and extend until Monday, December 20th, giving potential candidates less than 2 weeks to file required paperwork. At 10 a.m. Monday, December 27th, the names of those who have filed to run for City Council District 5 will be drawn for the order they will appear on the ballot. Early voting will take place weekdays only, from January 12th until January 25th, excluding January 17th in observance of Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Two candidates had filed to run for election by 5 p.m. Tuesday, John Austin Stokes and Lynette Lucas, according to a statement released by the city. What potential candidates need to do. San Angelo residents living in District 5 who wish to serve on City Council can acquire candidate packets for the January 29th special election either online or at City Hall, 72 West College Avenue. Candidate packets can be downloaded online at COSATX.US/elections. Physical copies of required forms are available in the city clerk's office in room 204 on the second floor of City Hall, according to a city news release. The office is open weekdays 8 a.m. to noon and 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. Candidates will file the necessary paperwork in the city clerk's office during the filing period, a release stated. How to register to vote. Voter registration applications are available at the Tom Green County Election Voter Registration Office on the first floor of the Ed B. Keys Building, 113 West Beauregard Avenue. Applications can also be obtained online at votetomgreencounty.org by mail or by calling 325-659-6541. Completed applications can be returned in person or by mail. Citizens can also register to vote when renewing their driver's license in person at a Texas Department of Public Safety office. To determine eligibility to vote or current voter registration status, visit votetexas.gov/register-2-2022. Vote. Important special election dates. Filing period, Tuesday, December 7th through Monday, December 20th. Ballot drawing, 10 a.m., Monday, December 27th. Register to vote by Thursday, December 30th. Early voting, Wednesday, January 12th through Tuesday, January 25th. Election day, Saturday, January 29th, 2022. Where to vote on Election Day. On Election Day, January 29th, polls will open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. at the following locations, according to a city news release. Angelo Bible Church, 3506 Sherwood Way. MHMR Services of the Concho Valley Administration Building, 1501 West Beauregard Avenue. St. Mark Presbyterian Church, 2506 Johnson Avenue. For more information, contact City Clerk Julia Antilli at 325-657-4405 or email julia.antilli, A-N-T-I-L-L-E-Y, at COSATX.US. Remember when ZZ Top's guitarist visited downtown San Angelo for chips and hot sauce? We do. By John Tufts, published December 6th. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame legends ZZ Top have performed for more than 50 years, and Tuesday will take the stage at the Taylor County Coliseum in Abilene, familiar stomping grounds for a band whose first show in the storybook capital of America was at Abilene High School in 1971. The stories vary, but a consistent one is that tickets cost 50 cents for the high school show, writes Greg Jaklovitz, editor of the Abilene Reporter News. When ZZ Top came to San Angelo. While ZZ Top may be playing Tuesday, December 7th in Abilene, the band is no stranger to the Concho Valley. Vocalist and guitarist Billy Gibbons, drummer Frank Beard, and vocalist-bassist Dusty Hill performed in San Angelo on May 22, 2017. Hundreds of concert attendees lined up early outside Foster Communications Coliseum, 50 East 43rd Street, to hear the band play. Prior to the show, Gibbons made a few stops at several iconic San Angelo landmarks and businesses. Local resident Stephen McLaughlin, who volunteered to work backstage at the show, recalled those moments vividly. In the mid-afternoon, the backstage manager called me to the back of the Coliseum and told me, "Mr. Gibbons wants you to take him to the local music store to buy some guitar slides." So I did, McLaughlin said in a message to the Standard Times. McLaughlin transported Gibbons to Tarpley Music, 2200 West Beauregard Avenue, where the famed rock and roller greeted staff and patrons alike. Afterward, Gibbons wanted photos of Fort Concho, followed by a quick pit stop in downtown San Angelo. "He told me he was running low on hot sauce and wanted me to take him to a restaurant to get some," McLaughlin said, who noted that by this time, the backstage manager had texted asking where the two were and said they needed to return. But Gibbons wanted his hot sauce, so McLaughlin took him to Fuentes Cafe downtown, 101 South Chadron Street, before returning to the Coliseum. "Gibbons walked in and sat down at a booth and ordered hot sauce and chips to go," said restaurant owner John Fuentes, who added, "I hope ZZ Top returns to San Angelo soon." So does McLaughlin, who plans to see the band perform this month, and noted Gibbons was friendly and approachable wherever they went. In the music store and the restaurant, Gibbons stopped and talked to everyone that wanted to talk to him, and posed for every selfie anyone asked for. "A complete gentleman," McLaughlin said. While seated at the restaurant, Gibbons posed holding a business card belonging to McLaughlin, who owns McLaughlin Advertising in San Angelo. He talked about getting the hot sauce during the show that night, McLaughlin said. ZZ Top performs in Abilene. ZZ Top has performed in Abilene several times, which Gibbons likened to a homecoming during a show in 1977. Boy, after playing for all those Yankees, Gibbons told the crowd of 6,300 at the Coliseum in Abilene, it sure feels good to be home. Jacklowitz noted ZZ Top's appearance then was before Abilene went wet and introduced the song Driving While Blind by inviting fans to join him on a quick trip to a location outside of city limits for alcohol purchases. The show went 2 hours, and highlights include LaGrange, Tush, Heard It on the X, and Blue Jean Blues, Jacklowitz wrote. ZZ Top's last performance in Abilene was 2015. While fans have gotten older, they haven't become less enthusiastic, with nearly every ticket for the 2021 show in Abilene sold out, despite the loss of Hill, who died earlier this year at age 72. Elwood Francis, the group's guitar tech for 30 years, will be more than capable, wrote Jacklowitz. He can really dig in. He adds a propulsion to the songs that is really enjoyable, Gibbons told the Las Vegas Review-Journal in October. If you go, ZZ Top with opening act Tim Montana. His song, The Beard Came Here to Party, was a theme song for the Boston Red Sox during their 2013 postseason run. When, 8 p.m. Tuesday. Where, Taylor County Coliseum. Tickets, still a few balcony seats at $39.50 plus service charge and $69.50 plus fees for floor seats still left. Special packages also available. Go to TaylorCountyExpoCenter.com. Concho Christmas Celebration Parade Lights Up San Angelo by John Tufts, published December 5th. The streets in downtown San Angelo were merry and bright Saturday, crowded with people who lined up to watch the annual Christmas parade. Children and their parents, decked in festive lights and Santa hats, cheered as brightly decorated floats passed by. The Concho Christmas Celebration Parade began Saturday evening, December 4th, winding a course from Chadburn Street to Concho Avenue. Parade participants strolled along the sounds of Christmas carols and handed out candy to children. The parade included floats, cars decorated with lights and wrapping paper, and marchers from local businesses and organizations. Christmas at Old Fort Concho returns with a bang by John Tufts, published December 4th. Cannons roared on the parade fairgrounds Saturday during the 40th annual Christmas at Old Fort Concho celebration. This year marked its return after taking a hiatus in 2020 due to the coronavirus pandemic, the first such cancellation in the event's history. It was kind of upsetting to cancel last year, but history shows that was the right decision, said Bob Bluthart, site manager for the historic site, during an earlier interview with the Standard Times. Bluthart welcomed the event's return, saying Christmas at Old Fort Concho was created in 1982 as both a community celebration and as a fundraiser for the fort. It usually brings between 13,000 and 15,000 people to Fort Concho and generates about $50,000 to $60,000 in fundraising. On Saturday, December 4th, hundreds of people flocked to Fort Concho, 630 South Oak Street, for food, shopping, entertainment, and history. Dozens of reenactors dressed as Texas Rangers, Cowboys, Native Americans, Buffalo Soldiers, and other military figures from historical periods marched along the parade field, fired rifles, and interacted with the public. Christmas music could be heard strumming from banjos in the shade of tents and from the buildings where people strolled, taking in the atmosphere. Inside, people shopped from dozens of merchants who sold candles, jewelry, books, knives, treats, and more. As in previous years, the event featured a Christmas at Old Fort Concho cookie decorating contest and gingerbread house contest, as well as Santa Claus, who was present to greet and take photos with children. Andrew Graves announces run for judge, County Court at Law Number 2, by Andrew Graves, published December 3rd. Andrew Graves, an attorney of 20 years, has announced his bid for Tom Green County Court at Law Number 2 judge. Graves filed for a place on the March 2022 primary ballot on November 13th and is seeking the Republican Party's nomination, according to a release. For the next judge to maintain the high standards Judge Penny Roberts has set, they will need extensive experience in all facets of the law, Graves said. I am able to offer you that. The release detailed Graves' background in law with experience in criminal and civil cases. Like you, I love our community, Graves said. Throughout my adult life, I have taken every opportunity to get involved and give back. To serve on the bench would be a natural progression of both my legal career and my service to our community. New Asian restaurant Aqua Bistro sets opening date in San Angelo, by Elena Edgen, published December 3rd. A new Asian cuisine restaurant planning to offer a taste of the world has set an opening date in San Angelo. Aqua Bistro, 3029 Sherwood Way, will open its doors this weekend inside a newly remodeled building that was once a Pizza Hut. Restaurant owner Tracy Tran said Asian meals contain the layers of emotions, of stories, of consciousness, and a heaven of memories, which motivated her into business, according to a social media post on Facebook. The bistro will focus on crafting Asian-inspired dishes with a twist to match local tastes. A menu was not available as of 8 a.m. Friday. Hopeful foodies can reserve a table for the soft opening December 4th and 5th by calling 325-617-2361. The grand opening will be Monday, December 6th, and there will be wine giveaways. People can keep up with the restaurant on Facebook at facebook.com/aqua.bistro.san-angelo. Terry McKeska Foundation continues relief work in Nepal despite COVID challenges, by Gloria Johns, special to the San Angelo Standard Times. Since 2015, when the country of Nepal suffered a devastating earthquake, the Terry McKeska Foundation has successfully completed 74 aid trips, providing food, shelter, medical supplies, school supplies, and infrastructure in the form of roads and water wells to the region. But the effort required behind the scenes to make the necessities of life a reality for the people of Nepal reads something like out of an Indiana Jones movie. The most recent trip took place in August of this year and was complicated by COVID restrictions and inaccessibility to the villages that needed help the most. Terry McKeska, founder and CEO of the Terry McKeska Foundation, described the often harrowing adventure. My first attempt in June to get a visa through the Nepal Embassy in Washington, D.C., was denied due to the virus. Then in July, I was issued a visa, but I was required to get the COVID vaccine and then quarantine once I arrived, said McKeska. The trip to Nepal took 34 hours, and once I arrived in Kathmandu, I waited in a long line in a tent outside the airport where temperatures, vaccine cards, and quarantine reservations were checked. All of this was required before I could even enter the airport and go through immigration, he said. After quarantine, McKeska said he joined Pastor Amash Kada and his family, delivering truckloads of rice, pallets of holy Bibles, knitted hats, gloves, and clothes to the Christian churches. Hundreds of families lined up with their children and babies tied to their backs to receive help, many of whom had walked miles to get there. The weather was warm and raining most of the time and created severe flooding. We had a 2-hour drive through the jungle, then a 4-hour wait for the river to go down to enter one village, McKeska said. Hundreds lined up in the rain, waiting for medical treatment and prescriptions. We stayed all day to provide health care to everyone in the surrounding villages. In the village of Madi, we built a new church at a cost of less than $7,000, as the labor was all volunteer. As soon as we did the ribbon cutting, more than 150 people rushed in and packed the church, McKeska said. These families were so hungry to hear the word of Jesus and get their own Holy Bible. During the third week of the mission, the east side of Nepal in the Japa district was still locked down, but McKeska had promised the Lions Club of Ladies and Leo Club of Girls that he would help build restrooms with vending machines for sanitary products for two very poor government schools. When a civic club meets in the U.S., there's usually a lunch with insignias or club flags on display. In Nepal, the Lions Club of Ladies met with McKeska in stealth, arriving one or two at a time to avoid the scrutiny of local authorities. Once assembled on the second floor of an old office building in the village of Bertamode, the ladies locked the door and took out their Lions Club banner to hang on the wall. Each took out their Lions Club vest from their tote bag and put them on. I had $2,900 in donations in the form of rupees in my backpack for the project, McKeska said. The engineer and architect volunteered their time and talent. The local San Angelo East Lions Club contributed to this project as well. After completing the East Side project, McKeska traveled back to Nepal to visit two orphanages that were in need of food, clothes, and school supplies. While distributing the items, McKeska noticed a bad smell and realized it was coming from the carpet. I remembered that this was the same carpet from when I visited the orphanage in 2015 after the earthquake. And after pulling it up, it was shocking to see all the mold and mildew from past rains that had accumulated, McKeska said. In my head, I started calculating the cost to replace the carpet, a cost not included in the original budget for the trip. McKeska found a merchant nearby who sold carpets and then wrote out an estimate for materials and labor, which totaled $385 in U.S. dollars. I asked when it could be installed, and he said right now. I was shocked, but these businesses had no customers for 18 months and were starving for a sale, McKeska said. I slept most of the way back to the U.S., and when I landed at DFW Airport, I realized how blessed we are to have so many programs such as Medicare, Medicaid, food stamps, unemployment benefits, government programs, COVID relief, food banks, and so on, McKeska said. I am beyond grateful and blessed to live in the USA and happy that I have been blessed with donors who believe in what we try to do for these very poor people. The next Terry McKeska Foundation mission will take place in 2022. If you or your organization would like to participate in the Nepal missions with the Terry McKeska Foundation, contact terrymckeskafoundation.org or email terrymfoundation@aol.com. Phone calls can be made to 325-277-5466. Or you can mail your gift to the Terry McKeska Foundation, P.O. Box 61692, San Angelo, Texas, 76906. The foundation operates from McKeska's home and without a paid staff, so that 100% of the donations can go to the cause. Your contribution is tax deductible to the fullest extent of the law. Gloria Johns is a freelance writer living in San Angelo, Texas. Police investigating canine exposure to unknown substance at San Angelo Animal Shelter, from staff reports, published December 1st. Around Saturday, November 13th, there was an exposure of an unknown substance to the San Angelo Animal Shelter's canine population, resulting in three dogs losing their lives and widespread canine illness throughout the shelter, according to a press release from the city of San Angelo. Through the city's partnership with Concho Valley Paws, immediate medical support was provided to all affected dogs, the release stated. The issue is unique to canines within the shelter and poses no risk to the community, according to the release. All other animals at the shelter, in addition to shelter staff, were not affected. This is an ongoing criminal investigation with the San Angelo Police Department. At this time, diagnosis of a contagious bacterial or viral infection is unlikely, the release stated, with evidence pointing to exposure to a non-contagious substance. However, diagnostic tests have not confirmed those results, and the investigation is still ongoing. All dogs have been treated accordingly to ensure their safety while in the shelter residence. The city and Concho Valley Paws continue to quarantine and observe the health of canines for adoptability while working closely with local veterinarians and the Texas A&M Veterinary Medical Diagnostic Laboratory, the release stated. Evidence suggests there is no risk to canines in the community because this does not appear to be a contagious viral or bacterial infection, according to the release. Animal services is open for intake. However, citizens are urged to take proper precautions such as microchipping their pets, checking their fence for escape spots, and registering their pet on helpmegethome.com and lost.petcolove.org. Found pets brought to the shelter may still be claimed by their owners. Beginning Wednesday, December 1st, Paws will reopen cat donations to the adoptions to the public. Dog adoptions will resume December 11th. Angelo State History students to display academic posters at Railway Museum, by Linda Thorson Bond, special to the San Angelo Standard Times, published December 1st. History will be shown in a new way at the Railway Museum of San Angelo. Students from Angelo State University have created academic posters of the U.S. Reconstruction period from the end of the Civil War in 1865 until 1877. Their work will be revealed Saturday, December 4th at 1 p.m. in the museum at 703 South Chadburn. Dr. Michael Powers, Assistant Professor of History in ASU's Dr. Arnaldo de Leon's Department of History, assigned the research to upper-level students who chose an event, development, theme, individual, or group that interested them. They wrote research papers based on their primary sources, such as diaries, newspapers, and other documents from the past, and secondary sources, including books and articles produced by academic historians. They used the research paper to create an academic poster that conveys their work in an intriguing way to the wider public. Dr. Powers said, "The purpose of this assignment is important in several ways. One, it allows students to take charge of their own learning, which is not only more rewarding and memorable, but demonstrates a fuller understanding of their topics. It allows them to become an expert on it. But the purpose of the assignment goes beyond teaching content. It also teaches skills, such as evaluating and comparing sources. This level of critical thinking will be valuable to students in whatever careers they choose after graduation. The assignment also hones written and visual communication skills. Finally, crafting a professional poster is increasingly common in a wide variety of professions and careers. Students did research on their projects by partnering with Angelo State's West Texas Collection with Shannon Sturm, head of special collections and programs. Students had a library research day where Sturm demonstrated how to search digital historical databases from the Library of Congress to various Texas institutions. Student posters have central questions that form the crux of their research argument and narrative, Dr. Powers said. They also contain historical context that grounds their topic in wider developments within the United States and the world. In addition to including their findings, their posters also have engaging pictures, images, and maps to illustrate the research. The topics reflect a wide range of seminal events and transformations that occurred in the years following the Civil War, from Chinese laborers on the Transcontinental Railroad, Native American conflicts, and contentious presidential elections, campaigns for civil rights, and the white backlash that followed, to the ways early professional baseball were part of the changes of industrial capitalism. The public is invited to the opening of the exhibit at no charge. The exhibit will stay up through February. Dr. Powers plans to have students follow this project with presentations representing the Gilded Age and Progressive Era. The Railway Museum is open every Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Admission is $3 to $5, but admission to this opening is made complimentary by a grant from the San Angelo Cultural Affairs Council for the museum's Art Aboard project. Over 50 years of dancing tradition ends in San Angelo after club calls it quits. By Elena Edgen, published December 1st. Over half a century of a San Angelo tradition will end this week with the final steps of the Promenade Squares Dance Club. John Gein, caller for the Square Dancing Club since 1991, announced the group's last dance, which will be held at 7:30 p.m. Thursday, December 2nd at the Promenade Square Dance Studio, 618 Locust Street. "It's time to say goodbye," said Gein, 88. "My health isn't what it used to be, as has attendance. This will be the end of square dancing in San Angelo." The group's first major square dancing festival was held at the Coliseum in 1966 with an attendance of about 400. As time passed, festivals moved to the Convention Center, then Fort Concho, until they stopped in the late 1980s. The Promenade Squares Dance Club kept the tradition alive in San Angelo for decades, with their dancers performing in local and state fairs. Festivals they performed at include the Texas Square Dance Festival, Heritage Folk Dance Exhibition, along with 23 years at Christmas at Old Fort Concho. "This will be the first year we won't entertain a stage at Fort Concho," Gein said. "We will miss those folks." With 20 years of calling, Gein mentioned some of his favorite moments with the club included going to the festivals. "We were kind of recognizable. When we arrived, people would say, 'San Angelo is here,'" Gein said. "We had a lively group." In 2017, Gein was also honored with the Prestige Award in the Texas State Callers Hall of Fame. Another special memory involved his late wife when they celebrated their anniversary at the club. "I'm sorry to see it end, and I'm leaving with a lot of fond memories," he said. "While here, I taught several hundred people. I hope they enjoyed it, as it brought joy to my life." I Set My House on Fire. More details released in San Angelo Arson Case. By Elena Edgen, published December 1st. A San Angelo man accused of torching his father's home Sunday allegedly confessed to committing the act to an employee at a drive-through liquor store, asking they keep it a secret. Police have since charged Justin Ross Cuellar, 28, on suspicion of arson after a home roughly two blocks away from Lone Star Middle School burned to the ground. About 8:44 p.m. Sunday, November 28th, first responders arrived to a home engulfed in flames in the 2400 block of West Harris Avenue. The fire started spreading to another home as firefighters raced to extinguish the blaze. Police met with neighbors who said they heard an explosion, then saw the house in flames. The resident whose house was on fire told investigators he received a phone call from his adult son, later identified as Cuellar, who said, "I'm burning this expletive down," according to an arrest affidavit released Tuesday, November 30th. Prior to the fire, the man told police Cuellar had been arguing with a woman, then attempted to argue with him over nothing, records state. The man told police he did not feel safe returning home and attempted to get a hotel room for the night. As he tried to do this, a neighbor called to tell him the house was on fire, records state. Police found Cuellar in the 2700 block of Rainey Street, who agreed to speak but gave no pertinent information regarding the arson before terminating the interview, according to the affidavit. During their investigation, police obtained a witness statement from an employee at a nearby drive-through liquor store in the 2300 block of Sherwood Way. They said Cuellar approached them and said, "I set my house on fire," then asked if his secret would be safe with them. Police later arrested Cuellar on suspicion of arson. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $750,000 bond as of 5 p.m. Tuesday, November 30th, according to online jail records. San Angelo woman sends texts for help after being threatened with sword. One arrested. By Elena Edgen, published November 30th. A text for help led to the arrest of a San Angelo man who police say threatened a woman with a sword. On Saturday, November 26th, a woman in the 2600 block of Sunset Drive texted another woman for help and they called police. Officers arrived at the residence where they heard screams and someone rushed to the door, according to an arrest affidavit released Tuesday, November 30th. A crying woman opened the door and informed officers a man inside had threatened to cut her throat, records state. She said police told police that they had had an argument and he pushed her into a bathtub, then pressed a knife or short sword into her ear. Officers noted a cut by her ear consistent with a blade tip, according to the affidavit. The man threatened to stab her in the brain and cut her throat while holding a blade to her neck. She told officers she was able to de-escalate the situation and he released her. The man told officers the two swords they found in the living room, one under the couch, were for decoration. He also said he did not hurt the woman, according to the affidavit. Marshall Glenn Thomas Jr., 42, was arrested Saturday on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $60,000 bond as of 8:15 a.m. Tuesday, according to online jail records. San Angelo man faces 21 child sex crimes using Snapchat to meet children in Grape Creek. By Elena Edgen, published November 29th. A 21-year-old San Angelo man, Isaiah Cruz Castillo, was indicted this month on 21 child sex crimes. He faces a slew of felonies, from indecency to sexual assault, after targeting children through the social media app Snapchat, according to court documents released Monday. The indictments, filed in November, charged Castillo with 7 charges of indecency with a child by sexual contact, 3 aggravated sexual assaults of a child, 11 sexual assaults of children. The charges involve 7 children, all younger than 17 years old, according to court records. They reported sexual abuse from August 13th through October 5th, 2021. What we know so far, Snapchat and texts led to initial charges against Castillo. On September 15th, a person found sexually explicit messages between a man, later identified as Castillo, and a child, 14 to 15 years old. The person called law enforcement to report the messages, according to an arrest affidavit. 3 weeks later, on October 7th, investigators learned the child met Castillo on September 4th, who gave them alcohol and drove them and another person around the Grape Creek community. During the drive, the man inappropriately touched the child, according to court documents. During an interview with investigators, Castillo identified several children he had targeted for sexual assault through Snapchat, records state. A sheriff's office release noted at least six children had been identified and searched for more possible victims. On October 14th, more children were interviewed. They said Castillo contacted them through Snapchat and each made an outcry of sexual abuse, records state. One 13-year-old child told investigators they had been in contact with Castillo on Snapchat. They said Castillo drove them to an elementary school park where he sexually assaulted them on September 7th. The child recognized Castillo's booking photo and Snapchat username. From this case, Castillo was charged on suspicion of two counts of aggravated sexual assault of a child. Three 14-year-old children, in separate cases, reported Castillo picked them up, drove them to a nearby area or park, and sexually assaulted them. They reported the assaults happened on September 1st, 2nd, and 5th. Castillo, last arrested October 16th, has remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $200,000 bond as of 10:21 a.m. Monday, according to online judicial records. A court date has been tentatively scheduled for December, according to online court records. Green kingfishers, often an overlooked part of Texas streams, by Michael Price of Wild About Texas, published December 1st. It has been said often and repeatedly that things are bigger in Texas, and when it comes to biological diversity, that saying is undeniably true. Due to its sheer size and therefore many ecoregions, our great state is home to an enormous amount of avian species, many of whom are endemics. One such species is a frequently overlooked species that spends its life along clear stream beds in the Edwards Plateau, and that race is the green kingfisher. The green kingfisher has a small range within the borders of the United States. In fact, aside from a very disjunct and trivial population in southern Arizona, the only state that this species can be seen in is Texas, where it can be observed from the Concho Valley eastward to the Austin area, then southward outside of the border deep into Mexico. Like other species of kingfishers, it prefers to inhabit bodies of fresh water. However, unlike other species of kingfishers, this variety seems to prefer shallow flowing streams rather than large bodies of waters, such as lakes and ponds. More often than not, this species is heard before it is viewed. The vocal sounds it makes are a harsh tick, tick, followed by a short rattling sound. Once in view, however, there is no mistaking this species for any other bird. It is rather small in stature, with a body length of less than 9 inches and a wingspan of just over 1 foot. As the common name alludes to, this bird is primarily green on the upper parts and head, save for a conspicuous white collar around the neck and white speckles on the wings and tail. The underparts are white, and males have a large rusty band on their chest. Both sexes have an elongated, thick black bill that makes the head appear disproportionately large. Unlike its close relatives who spend time hanging out on high wires and trees along waterways, this small fishing bird prefers to remain low, next to the water, either on branches or rocks. It feeds primarily on fish, but will occasionally consume small frogs as well. It does not engage in the well-known behavior of hovering several feet above the water and diving down to ambush its prey like the belted kingfisher. Rather, this species plunges directly into the water from the rocks or branches that it hunts from. For most of the year, the species of bird is quite solitary. However, during the breeding season, females will select a mate and they will remain in a monogamous relationship throughout the rearing season. The pair work together to build the unique nest along the banks of the shoreline in a horizontal burrow that is usually 2 to 3 feet deep. While this nest typically has no lining of which to speak, it can often be observed rather easily by the debris of undigested fish scales and bones located at the entrance to the burrow. The white eggs, which number from 3 to 6, are small, 1 inch by 1 inch, and are laid once a year. Both parents tend to the eggs for the 19-day incubation period. The young stay in the nest and are fed by both parents up to another month before they have to leave the nest to fend for themselves. With such a specialized habitat, this avian species is subject to negative population trends, with pollution and loss of habitat ranking as the top two reasons. However, at the present time, the population seems to be fairly stable and increasing in areas of Texas as folks continue to be good stewards of riparian habitats. Michael Price is owner of Wild About Texas, an educational company that specializes in venomous animal safety training, environmental consultations, and ecotourism. Contact him at wildabouttexas@gmail.com. And finally, here's our column for the week from Allison Watkins. Tips to keep Christmas plants bright and healthy through the holidays. Published December 1st. The poinsettias are out at every store, and they make great gifts to bring to parties and gatherings. Poinsettias, Christmas cactus, rosemary tree topiaries, etc., really bring festive atmosphere to the home during the holidays. Here are some tips to keep them bright and healthy. Select a poinsettia that looks large for the pot and is thick and full. The colorful part, called bracts, which are modified leaves that surround the true flower, should be fully colored to the edge and not have green on them. To keep poinsettias happy, keep them away from drafts and water them properly, but don't overdo it. Wait until the soil starts to dry out at the top of the root ball before watering. When needed, soak thoroughly in a sink with the decorative wrapper taken off. Let it drain well, then place the wrapper back on. Christmas cactus is a wonderful houseplant that can live permanently in the home and rebloom year after year. In nature, it lives hanging up on jungle tree branches and prefers light, porous potting media mixed with sand and leaf mold. After it finishes blooming for the season, water when the root ball dries out pretty thoroughly. Don't water too frequently. Fertilize with a balanced fertilizer during the spring and summer season and keep at a temperature between 70 and 80 degrees. Mist this plant occasionally with a water bottle to increase humidity around the plant. If using a real Christmas tree, select one that is fresh and healthy. Give the needles a gentle tug. They should stay in place and not come off easily. To keep it fresh, cut an inch off the bottom after transporting to the final location where it will be displayed and place in water immediately. Keep the basin full of water so the tree can readily absorb what it needs. This helps not only with appearance, but with safety. Trees that dry out are more prone to fires. Some choose to go with a living Christmas tree, one that is potted and can be planted outside after the holiday. The biggest challenge with living Christmas trees is that they do not do well indoors for long, so try and limit the time spent inside the home to 10 days. We are limited as to what kinds of evergreen trees will grow in the Concho Valley. Arizona cypress and Afghan pine are two examples that should do well. Simple greenery is also very festive and can add a lot of beauty inside the home. Take cuttings off holly shrubs, junipers, or rosemary from the landscape to make fresh wreaths and bows for mantles, centerpieces, etc. Just be careful to use good pruning techniques and don't cut the plants back excessively. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.